Welcome to the Self Storage Insight Podcast. In today's episode, we are going to talk dynamic pricing. What is it? Is it right for your facility? And how do you go about implementing it? We are going to answer all these questions and much more. Welcome to another episode of the Self Storage Insight Podcast. I'm Ben Shirey, excited today to be joined by Brett Copper. And Brett, as always, excited to have you on the show with me. And we're going to be talking about dynamic pricing today with self storage and setting rates dynamically. And, you know, what is dynamic pricing? There's a lot of you know, talk about it. It's been around for a couple of years, but some people still don't realize what it is and what it does. And so, Brett, I guess if you don't mind jumping in, what is dynamic pricing and what's a good way to explain it?
Of course. Yeah. And as always, thanks for having me. So dynamic pricing at the bare minimum is really the changing of rates based on supply and demand. I mean, it really starts and can be as complex as you want it to be or not complex. And so everyone kind of falls somewhere in this big spectrum. You know, you have the REITs, which can change by the minute based on availability per, you know, unit size, the 13th 10 by 10 cost different than the 12th or the 15th, and those prices adjust based on market conditions, how much are available at the facility. And sometimes it's just as simple as, hey, my rates change when I get to 90%, then 85%, then 80. And so people can really do it anywhere in the spectrum, and we can get into you know, some of those specific places that people like to set those, and as far as the different strategies. But at the bare minimum, it's letting those rates change based on supply and demand.
Right. And how much of it is the supply versus the competition? As far as, you know, I've talked to multiple operators and they're like, man, as soon as I adjust my rate, the REIT across the street, their rate's $5 cheaper than mine. How much of that plays into this idea as well behind dynamic pricing of competing with your competitors' rates versus just the demand that's available?
Yeah. So it all depends on the occupancy of your facility first. So if you're in a lease up stage and you're not stabilized, let's say it's a new build or you're below, you know, 80-75% and you're trying to get to that stabilization marker, then you're going to really base those rates and promotions on your competition. Both are important factors. It used to be that you could really kind of charge really high rates, but as long as you had good promotions, people would still rent. Now the balance has shifted with inflation and all sorts of other economic factors. So now people really do care about the rental rate as well as the promotion. And so you really have to pay attention in the market, look at your competitors within your 3 to 5 miles. If it's boat and RV, maybe it's up to 10 miles, just depends on what your product is. And as long as you're paying attention to that, you want to be competitive, because right now, about 86% of tenants are choosing to rent somewhere based on price alone, which has never been the case, is the giant number one factor. So if you're in lease up, you really got to pay attention to your competitors. If you're stabilized, then really you're basing your rates off of your own supply and demand, because clearly you're getting those tenants and you need to base it on what you have left. And there's ways you can direct people to other unit sizes that aren't as desirable by overpricing your more desirable. And so there's all sorts of things, but definitely pay attention to competition if you're leasing up.
Right. And so with dynamic pricing and the importance of it, I guess, how big does the market that you're in play a role in that? As far as, you know, tertial markets, is it not as big of a deal if you have something like that available versus metro areas, or where have you seen it play the biggest role?
Yeah, so definitely the more competitive the market, certainly that makes it's a big mitigating factor in how successful you are, because the more intricate your competitors are and the more they change, they're going to be able to capture more tenants based on those fluctuating prices, at least on the front end. And really, you know, they're going to gain more as far as NOI and revenue on the back end, having made those changes. And so in your case, first and foremost is making sure you're good to get them in, but you're really leaving a bunch of money on the table if you're not dynamically continuing to raise those rates as units become less and less available. Because, yeah, if you've got you know, 20 10 by 10s and only one or two left. I mean, those better be pretty expensive 10 by 10s. It makes no sense that the first five paid exactly what the 20th is going to pay. And so it, while it might not hurt you as far as occupancy at that point, it's certainly hurting you in the long run when someone goes to buy your facility because they're looking at market rates. And so if they notice that you haven't been increasing and getting people in at a high economic occupancy rate, then they're just going to buy you and they're going to be able to add value from raising your rates. So you never want to, you know, look back after a sale, watch someone else bring your rates up and wish, man, I should have made that money instead of leaving it on the table. And it works to your question, whether it's tertiary or urban markets, that the type of market really only dictates how often you do rate increases, the amount, how much the prices change. Typically in a you know tertiary market where things are more spread out, you have less sophisticated competitors, your rates probably don't change near as much as they would in a really metropolitan area or urban competitive area where you have all these other competitors that are changing and reach and those kinds of things. So you still right. effective in both, but the level of complexity certainly changes if you are in a more competitive environment.
For sure. And yeah, I think it's really interesting there when you brought up, you know, if you're getting ready to sell your facility and somebody's going to come in and do this, you know, it's so crucial to do this kind of thing before you sell the facility because it's going to affect your NOI, which is how you're going to get a valuation. And so your facility becomes significantly worth more money by utilizing stuff like this, where we're maximizing the amount of revenue the facility can bring in, you know. And again, it's not an uncommon thing. Like as far as we see it all the time with hotels and reservations and sporting events and that sort of thing, where they're using the same kind of concept of, you know, the last seat available is the most expensive, and it should be, because once that's gone and it's sold out, then what, you can't do anything anymore. So the concept is very cool. How hard is it to implement as far as getting this up and running for a facility that's not currently using it?
Yeah. So first is, what software do they have? I mean, software is going to be paramount to their ability to do dynamic pricing, because I've met groups, there's still people out there today that don't have software, but they change their rates every day or every week. I can't even imagine the amount of handwriting and Excel forms that takes to do it. So choosing a good software system, and each one has a different level of revenue management capabilities. You know, some are as simple as saying, okay, when my facility occupancy hits these markers, my rates change by 5%. Some are as complex as saying, hey, for my 10 by 10 non-climate interior units specifically, at every rental, I want it to increase or decrease by a percentage or a dollar amount. I mean, you can get very complex, but really you have to make sure that your software can support it. So when you're shopping for software systems, look at their revenue management capability. But in today's world, most software, you program it however you want, and then it makes those changes over time based on what it is you put in. So in our case, we set up facilities based on what owner strategies are, market strategies are, and then that changes. And then we just tweak those factors as needed so that, you know, we don't have to have someone go in every day and change the rates manually. They're changing based on the parameters that we set up. And so understanding, I think, the initial setup can be difficult for new owners and figuring it out. You know, how much should it change? And starting super simple is the way to do it. I mean, base each size on, you know, occupancy for that size. So you say, all right, all my non-climate 10 by 10s, when I have 90% of them left, I want them at $80. When I have, 10% of them left, I want $120. Whatever that is for you, just make it very simple. And then you can dial it in over time as you see more move-ins, more move-outs, how the market's swaying, how's your occupancy doing? Because in reality, it could be as simple as, I have really high occupancy, people keep renting, I need my rates to go up. Or man, my rates are at a point where I'm having a negative move-in, move-out ratio, they need to go down. Keep it simple in the beginning, and you can always make it more complex later.
Yeah. And along those lines, how much time do you feel like you need to spend as far as evaluating how it's working and making those tweaks and adjustments? You know, as you start pretty simple, you want to be able to analyze that data pretty quickly and then kind of try to fine tune in how you want that program to run. How much goes into that, the upkeep or the improvement of it?
Yeah. So the initial, what's interesting is when you do it for the first time, there are some other mitigating factors. So, what time of year is it? Did are you setting it in January and then all of a sudden you're getting to May and just the numbers are going to tweak differently? So it takes few months of watching, and then you have to just kind of silo that into the time of year. So during the slow season, you're going to have different data points that you need to pay attention to, probably a slower change, a much slower change. So you might need to only, review your rates once a month during the slow season because the market changes so little and the rates are lower. Man, when you get to April, May through August, you almost in some cases want to make sure, especially in the beginning, you're reviewing them every week because you want to make sure that sometimes a difference of $5, $10, $15 could really help when you have a lot of units to rent per unit. And so you need to make changes. Like if you're in a college town, for instance, there's some markets we have to check those rates in the beginning when we launch them in a college market during the busy season, like once every few days, because it can be such an explosion of rentals that even a week could be 50 rentals. And so you really have to use some of those market conditions. But at a normal facility, tertiary market, let's say it's busy season, in the beginning, make sure you're looking at it, once every week or two, see how those changes are. And then you can get to a place where they probably need to be reviewed every month, just for a few hours a month to make sure they're where you want them to be.
And it kind of even speaks back to a little bit of, the experience that working with people that do this for multiple facilities kind of helps you in, because, there's a lot of new operators since 2020, right, that are experiencing kind of the turns in the market. I was just talking to somebody about this, like the market kind of cycles. And if you're newer to the industry, you haven't seen any of these cycles or any of the turns as far as, we were in a little bit of a downturn last year and rentals were slower. And so working with companies that have been through those kind of cycles already, and they know some adjustments to try and to make, they can help keep you with their experience, keep you out in front of the game a little bit versus trying to figure out everything on your own for the very first time. Because there's going to be a lot of tests and failures that you're going to make as the market changes. Like we're going to try things and it's fine if it fails, but we have to try to figure out where to go. And so having that experience in your corner of, hey, this person, this company has implemented, dynamic pricing for multiples across the board, having that experience on the table is so important.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and for you being in the software side, being open to having conversations with your software provider on how to better utilize their software. So many people are afraid to ask the software company, like, what are features that I don't know about to help automate this process? And you got to be able to ask those. I deal with people that have, Storedge or SiteLink or something and have no idea how to even use the dynamic pricing or where to even start. Make sure you're talking to your software company about the ways to use their product, because most of the time they're going to be pretty eager and open to help you use more capabilities to try and keep you as a client.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, having them conversations again, people, I think, yeah, if they're worried that they feel stupid or they're not sure, it's definitely worth talking to somebody about that is, knows what they're talking about in that field. So with the companies that you implement this for, how involved is the owner, with the dynamic pricing versus your company kind of stepping in and making recommendations?
Man, that's a great question. So, owners fall on a different parts of the spectrum. Some want to know every single detail of every rate increase that we do, and they want to approve or decline it. And we do give them that freedom to do it. Basically, in those cases, the team goes in, we program the rate increases, all the upcoming changes, we send them for review for the owner. They tell us, hey, yep, we approve these. We want it a little more aggressive, less aggressive. And that comes with when we first onboard, we have these continual conversations of what's your preferred strategy? Do you want occupancy? Do you want revenue? Or do you want the best of both worlds? Everybody has a slightly different take on what they want for the facility. And so, even with that, some of these owners want to know every single detail. But typically, it's not just with revenue management. They want to know every detail about everything, and they're more than we. Some owners, it's lucky if we can get them on the phone once a month to go through things. And in those cases, like we're just programming it. We go through every month, make our changes. They see the revenue changes and reporting, and we share that with them. And it can fall anywhere on that spectrum. So just depends on how involved an owner wants to be, and sometimes how educated they are. Because nothing's worse than an owner that's like, "Hey, I'm a first-time owner. I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm using a management company." And then they argue about every, you know, potential change that you make. It's like, wait a minute, you just said you don't understand what you're doing. We do this right. All over the country for hundreds of sites. Maybe we know, but we get it. It's their investment. It's my facilities or my investment, and owners want different things or they want to be more involved. So we understand that, but they fall anywhere few and far in between.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Everybody's going to be a little bit different, but yeah, that's great information too, as far as having that flexibility or knowing, you know, that you can be involved in whatever capacity you want to be involved with pretty much there. So as far as, you know, the dynamic pricing on the front end, where we change the rates to get people to move in, how does the revenue management side or the rate management side fall on like rate increases? I get these questions all the time about, you know, how often should I do rate increases? How should I implement them? So maybe we'll just start with one and say like, what do you recommend as far as rate increases? How often should you be increasing the rate on your tenants? Again, prospectively, I know there's going to be a lot of different answers there.
Sure. Yeah. So we'll start with kind of the range. I mean, initial rate increases could be anywhere between 3 months and really 10 months. I don't agree with people anymore. You know, some owners are saying, well, our area is sensitive, so we do them at yearly increases. If you look at the data of how long a tenant stays, it's about 14 to 16 months. If you do an initial rate increase around month 8, you're more likely to be able to do a second rate increase again in maybe 8 months and actually get some life out of it. So I would not wait for the year, but 3 to 10 months is pretty much what any of these companies are going to do. And each strategy depends on the company. The REITs are more akin to the first rate increase being between 3 to 5 to 6 months, which I think is very quick. In some markets, where it's just a home run market and you had low rates to get them in and everywhere's performing, well, then it's easier to do some of those initial rate increases. But the problem is the bigger the initial rate increase, the higher move-out ratio, which sounds common sense, but people just don't really think much about it. There's a big difference in taking a customer from $100 to $110 than taking them from $50 to $100. Even though it's the same amount of month, it's that increase that really gets people upset and the percentage of that increase. I like the sweet spot of the initial rate increase being between months 6 and 8, somewhere in that realm is usually pretty beneficial. Again, plenty of factors dictate how full is your facility. Is it still in lease up? If so, then, you know, you're probably more around month 10. But if you're at a stabilized facility that's been running for a while, good occupancy, you probably want to be somewhere around that 6 to 8 month mark. The percentage wise, while that does vary, probably on average, you're anywhere between 8 and 15% per rate increase. Some of those are going to be what, again, the facility performance, how far are those tenants from street rate? I mean, there's some sites we just talked about earlier where, you know, you buy a site and they've never done rate increases for 20 years. And right. Their average tenant is like a $40 10 by 10 and the market's $100. Well, the first rate increase might be $20 or $30 because they're so far from market and you have to make up some of that gap, yet they're still way under where anywhere else they could go.
Right.
Well, then that's more easy to swallow for them. Going, even though it's a 50% rate increase, you're going from 40 to 60 and the market rate's 100. So some of that can change. But again, if you talk about the law of averages, probably 8 to 15% for the initial. And then you're looking at rate increases, you know, at a sweet spot every 8 months or so.
Well, that's awesome. And that's great information too. Cause I was just going to get to, you know, the question of if you buy a facility that's way under and you kind of touched on that. Cause I do talk to, you know, people all the time that they're like, hey, I'm purchasing a facility or I inherited this facility. I have no idea why the rates are as low as they are, you know, and what should we do? And so giving advice on that kind of stuff and having those conversations, I hear everything in between. You know, you want to raise the rates across the board as soon as you purchase the facility and push out some of those people, and you're still going to increase your bottom line by doing those rate increases. And then other people just don't like to upset everybody at once. And so they try to break it into stages and, you know, raising a third at a time or whatever, so they can kind of see the data from how many people do move out from this increase versus hitting the whole facility at once on purchase.
Glad you said that. And I want to hit a point with that before I forget. So we get that a lot. And there's been a bunch of changes in our philosophy as well as some of the other management companies. So it used to be day one, we go ahead and do tenant insurance and rate increases, right? For anybody that is going to fall into that piece. And so instead, and that worked for a long time based on where market is, but where the market's changing, we're trying to be more lenient and more palatable to customers. So we do tenant insurance. We send out those letters pretty quickly, which would mean, hey, in most cases, they probably didn't have good tenant insurance penetration or any at all. So we would rather push that first because it is an actual benefit for tenants, right? If there is a break, if there's a fire, they're going to be covered. So it really does help. So we'll push that through and say, hey, in 30 days, you know, you either have to take our tenant insurance provider or provide proof of insurance. Right. About 85% of people just take the tenant insurance. Well, that kind of hits like a rate increase, a small one, but at least there's value tied to it because it's going to be $13 minimum. So you don't want to do your rate increases at the same time as tenant insurance. So typically, we'll have about a 60-day window between sending out the tenant insurance letters and then starting to do the first round of rate increases. And like you alluded to, we typically won't do all of the tenants at once. It'll be based on their anniversary date of when they came in. And so some portions of that tenant base will be spread out maybe over a couple months or the life of the facility for when they came in, which makes it much more palatable. So I would say we're in a market now where it is more important to be sensitive to the tenant base than it was 3-4+ years ago.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. Cause refilling those units is harder to do now than it was. And so if you push out a large percentage of the, you know, existing tenants at once, it just leaves a little bit of a bigger hole as you try to refill that bucket. Spreading those out obviously kind of takes off of that burden. How much do you then keep the strategy the same? So let's say you do a rate increase of 20%. It's a little bit lower than, you know, market rates. You go 20%. Do you evaluate how it's going as far as how many people are moving out at that rate and then possibly adjust, or how involved you kind of just have a set thing you're going to go across the facility regardless of how it runs?
No, that's right. So we have to watch the tenant base, how they move in that facility, move in, move out ratios post, you know, 30 days, 60 days from a rate increase. So yeah, all of that matters. And we can see, you know, any software, you have the ability to look at, you know, report and see who moved in, who moved out, and then you tie that to rate increases every month. And so you can see how much that affected it. But totally. It also matters how many units one tenant has. People forget to kind of analyze that. But there's a big hit if you have a commercial tenant renting 15 units that moves out. And so you really, when people have more than, you know, one unit, they've got two, three or more, it's better to, instead of giving them a 15% rate increase like everybody else, maybe it's 7% or 8% to be more palatable. So you really do have to watch tenant behavior as well as some of the details on the tenant to know, you know, what the results are going to be by giving them that rate increase.
Yeah. And to go kind of back to what you were saying a little bit earlier, since we're talking about revenue and all different streams of revenue and are increasing, maximizing the revenue with the tenant insurance, do you notice when you implement that where it's a requirement for the facility? Because I get this question a lot as well, is like a little bit of pushback. Do you see a lot of pushback from customers when you implement that tenant insurance, or does it not come up very often?
Very little from tenant insurance. We get much more for rate increases because at least with tenant insurance, we're giving an option, right? You either A, can provide proof of you have insurance, whether that's renters or homeowners insurance. And then we give you 30 days to provide that proof. Or if you don't provide it, well, then you're automatically enrolled in that. Because you give them a choice, it really becomes down to, do I want to track down this insurance? Or, hey, for $13 a month and $2,000 worth of coverage, does that suffice for me? And most people are not storing more than $2,000 worth of stuff in a storage unit. And so I think there's a level more of, it's like when you rent a truck, I always get the base insurance, even if my insurance covers it, because I want to know if like some idiot hits me on the highway and destroys that truck that I can walk away and it's covered. I think there is a peace of mind given to people, you know, even if it is more subconscious. But it does also generate a lot of income, right, for the facility. You know, insurance companies now, like in our case, our owners get 50%. Well, if you've got, you know, 100 people that take it, that's $13. So that's $650 a unit. Mm-hmm. It's a really big income stream to be a part of. So really have to I would always recommend starting with tenant insurance because you get such little pushback compared to rate increases, and it's easier to push through, easier to explain, and protects you as an owner. So if you're looking at all revenue options, let's start there, get that done immediately, and then look at some of the other ones.
Right. Yeah. And that's a great point too, because Yeah, like I've talked to people and they're like, well, if I'm going to try and force my tenants to purchase insurance, I would rather just do a small increase or a small rate increase, because I could do a small rate increase and then match what I'm going to make on the tenant insurance. But there is no benefit to the tenant in those cases. And so again, with providing that option where they can provide their own insurance, that's awesome information as well, that 85% still take the policy, because I was kind of curious on what kind of return you get, or how many people actually come up with their own policy or show that they have renter's insurance. So.
That point you just said, we get that question a lot too, right? Which is, I would rather do a rate increase. Well, the thing people don't realize is all your new tenants are going to pay the same rates as whatever your rates are set at for market and tenant insurance. So just that initial one is to get everybody else caught up. But then moving forward, it's an additional revenue stream. So you're never going to charge, less than your competitors who don't have tenant insurance. In most cases, you're probably going to charge more because you're a more sophisticated facility, because any good sophisticated operator offers tenant insurance. And so to that point, yeah, you really look at it that way initially, but that's completely gone after that first initial one. You're still doing regular rate increases. It's in addition to, and the most important factor people don't realize, man, you have a fire at a facility, and let's say 50 of you, we just had this, you have 50 units that burn up, and 48 of them had tenant insurance, right? Man, the way that you can sleep at night knowing that insurance company gave them checks the next day, within 24 hours. They said, hey, we're paying all of this. It indemnifies you as an owner so that you're not getting sued for these issues. They got insurance. They claimed how much stuff how much their goods were worth. It is a blessing for the tenants and the ownership and the management company, because it does add a level of protection, gives them financial restitution to say, look, we're taking care of you. And they only paid $13 a month to get that. It really is a win-win across the board.
Right. And another reason that I think that it's been growing so quickly in the industry. I mean, like even a year ago when I would talk to people, it didn't come up that often. And I mean, now it's like every conversation, even with these small mom and pop facilities that have 50, 60 units, it almost comes up on every conversation asking, do you guys support tenant insurance, or do you have an integration? And so it's really crazy how fast that's kind of become a revenue stream that everybody looks for. But there, in self-storage, we are limited in the options that we can generate revenue, right? So you can do rate increases, you can smell or sell some packable, packing items or something like that. And then after that, you're pretty much limited to a few options to increase your revenues. So it definitely has been a hot topic lately, as far as, within our office too, with, how many times it comes up on demos and within our customer base and things like that.
For sure.
So awesome, man. Well, I just looked up and realized we're at like 30 minutes already. So
wow. That was a quick one, man.
Yeah, it was. But any final thoughts on just revenue in general, increasing, maximizing your revenue? Any like last one point of advice that you'd like to give to a facility looking to increase their revenue streams?
Yeah. Talk to your management software company. If you don't have one, get a management software that's good, that's going to be usable. Talk to people like Ben, talk to, some of these other good groups in the industry. And then if you do have a management software that has some of those capabilities and you need help, talk to a consulting firm. You're more than welcome to reach out to me. I'll help you. I'll talk to you about it and just give you some pointers or direct you in the right place. There are tons of good resources in the industry. Most good groups here will help you out as an owner and be more than happy to talk to you to try and help you and explain it. And then I would say go to, one of the trade shows, a local state association, or one of the big ones, because they give great talks all the time on this stuff and have good resource boards. But by all means, feel free to reach out. I'm more than happy to help anybody that might have questions.
Awesome. Best way to contact you?
Yeah, just Brett, Brett, at copper.com.
Awesome. Thanks, Brett. As always, awesome to talk to you again today. And looking forward to the next conversation.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time, man. We love always participating with you every month.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Self Storage Insight Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Just a quick reminder, this episode was brought to you by CC Storage. CC Storage is a no-cost property management software that allows you to pass the fees for credit card processing onto your tenants, freeing up some CapEx space for your business and helping you more efficiently run your storage facility. If you'd like to learn more about CC Storage, click the link in the description below, and we hope to see you again for our next episode.